sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good.
Welcome to If Nothing Changes, Nothing Changes, Life Coaching with Deidre. I'm Deidre, your host, coming to you live on Inner Light Radio, broadcasting straight out of Richmond, California. Now, I know you could have listened to any of the thousands of podcasts on the radio, internet, or even satellite. So let me start off first for thanking you for picking mine. I am an organic therapist, personal mental trainer, self-esteem booster, good-hearted devil's advocate, relationship guru, archaeologist of the soul, and a boss, all rolled up into one, here to give you my perspective on life by guiding, deepening, and challenging your thoughts while influencing you with innovative, insightful information, not forgetting to motivate, provoke, and influence your actions while empowering, educating, and entertaining you. My show will be talking about life, dreams, relationships, love, happiness, health, wealth, fitness, careers, family, and everything else that goes along with all of that. This month, I'm continuing my women's health and wellness series. We have been talking about this for about 6 months now. Your new self-care habits should now include spa treatments, vagina health, cannabis healing, sound therapy, exercise and stretching, mental and emotional wellness, hair therapy, the importance of being part of a good, healthy community. And today I want to talk about women and their finances. I believe that women, especially Black women, should never feel the need to shrink in the presence of wealth, financial ambition, or transparent money talk. Too often, the intersection of gender, race, and class means Black women are left out of the financial conversation entirely. We are told to be humble, silent, or grateful for what we get, even when we deserve far more. But that narrative ends here. The talk about Black women and money is more than just about pay gaps and investing. It's a declaration that financial literacy and empowerment are our birthright. It's about shifting from survival mode to legacy building. And most importantly, it's about changing the cultural norms and inherited silence that have cost us too much for too long. Money has long been a taboo subject in many Black communities, particularly among women. Talking openly about salaries, investments, or financial wins is often perceived as boastful or inappropriate. But this quiet culture has a very loud cost. When we don't talk about money, we don't talk about value. When we don't talk about value, we accept being undervalued. And when we accept being undervalued, we uphold systems that were never designed with our success in mind. Silence is no longer self-protection, it's self-sabotage. The truth is, we deserve more. And the first step to getting more is talking about it. There is this mistaken belief that if Black women worked harder, they would receive the pay they deserved. In reality, Black women are working harder with less resources than white women. To understand the pay disparity between white women and Black women, consider the following points. Black women earn significantly less than white women on average, contributing to economic inequality. White women earn approximately 79 cents for every dollar earned by white men. Black women earn about 63 cents for every dollar earned by white men. This results in a wage gap of roughly 16 cents between white women and Black women. Black women are often overrepresented in lower paying jobs and underrepresented in higher paying fields. Between February and July of 2025, that was 6 months, Black women lost 319,000 jobs in the U.S. labor market. By comparison, white women saw a job increase of 142,000 jobs. While educational attainment is rising among Black women, systemic barriers still affect job opportunities and pay. Black households headed by a college graduate are less wealthy than less educated white ones. And racial and gender discrimination in hiring and promotions will hinder Black women's career advancement, especially in this administration. When Black women start their careers working with more white coworkers, they are less likely to stay at the company and less likely to get promoted. And differences in work experience and networking opportunities can also impact pay levels between the two groups. This isn't just about a few thousand dollars. It's about generational wealth. It's about mortgages we can't afford. It's about investments we delay. It's about businesses we don't start and dreams we compromise on. It's about the ripple effect of consistent under-earning and how it shapes the rest of our lives. So, as you know, anytime we are talking about money, we want the information to come from the best financial educator in the Bay, and that's Kendra Willis. But as we know, she's also a parent of two young women walking into adulthood. We know Kendra and her hubby plan to do two things that we also want to imitate. One, they plan on leaving an inheritance to their daughters, not a debt. And two, they are not going to leave their baby girls uneducated about financial matters. Instead, Kendra's babies will be prepared to manage, grow, and protect their wealth. Again, what we want for our baby girls too. So Kendra, welcome to a special show with you to discuss women and their finances as part of my Women's Wellness series.
Hey, Coach Deidre, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here. And my goal for today is to make sure that we leave some women empowered, educated, and in the know about what they should be doing with their money.
I know that's right. Well, when I told my mommy groups that you were coming, of course, only about women finances, the conversation, I was surprised the conversation shifted the way that it did. And we ended up getting, questions from different age groups of women. So we kind of put them in bundles for you so that you can, those of us that have kids in each of these age groups or are in these age groups can kind of have the stuff specific towards them. So let's start with some of our, I like to call them our babies, the little 20 and 30 year olds. So there's questions that they want to know. First off, how much of their salary should they be putting away for their future?
So we're talking about 20s and 30s. I want to just say this to the women that are in your 20s and 30s. Your 20s and 30s are all about setting the foundation. And small steps right now can completely change your financial future. So I want you to just know that these are the years where you are learning, but these are also the years where you're first starting to earn good money, right? So I want to say when it comes to how much you should be saving, let's just talk about what's a good starting point. A good target is about 15% of your income going towards your retirement future. But if that feels overwhelming, because I know a lot of people are going to say, especially in this economy, Kendra, 15% is that's a lot. That's okay. Don't worry. Start small. 3 to 5% is totally okay for a starting point, but you don't want to stay at 3 to 5% for 5 or 10 years. What matters most is first getting in the habit, and starting to save. And then you want to continue to increase as you grow. Now, here's another thing, that I like to talk to women about or my clients about. I want them to understand what they're saving for. You should always, the minute you start working, Coach Deidre, I don't care if you're 21 years old, you need to be saving for your future. You need to be saving for your exit strategy. You need to be saving for the day where you don't have to work. Not that you're not going to work, but you need to have a date on the calendar where you are going to know your fire number. That's when you are going to fire your boss and retire early. Okay. You're going to fire your boss. You're going to be independent. You're going to be able to retire early. You don't have to work until you're 70 anymore if you do it right. So here's a rule of thumb. I tell women that by the time you are 30, your goal is to have 1x your annual salary saved up. So if you make $60,000 and you're 25 years old, you want to make sure that in these next 5 years, you're aiming at saving or having $60,000 in some form of a retirement account. And then by the time you are 40, you want to be aiming for 3x your income. Because by the time you're 65, which is allegedly that magic number, you want to have 10x your income saved up in some form of a retirement plan. Retirement is not about age, it's about money. So the sooner we start harvesting that money, the sooner we start putting that money in a place where it's actually going to start working for us, the better off we'll be. So if you're listening, you want to aim for 15% minimum. If you cannot, start with 3%, start with 5%, but I just want you to start. But always know what that end game is supposed to be looking like. And that will shift as times change, but at least you know in your mind, look, by the time I'm in my 30s, I want to have at least 1 year of my annual salary saved somewhere.
Good job. What about, and I hear this is a, I don't think it's a new topic. I think it's becoming very normal, but for some reason, women are talking about it again, and that's having separate finances from their spouses if they do marry. Because you got, you know, because their thing is, I'm marrying late. Let's say, you know, I'm marrying and I'm going to be 36 years old. I'm already established. I already got my stuff. Right. So should I be combining my finances with my new husband, or what's the pros and cons of doing that?
So I've been married all my life, and my daughters often say, "Mom, you don't know what's going on. You've been married. You never dated. You've been married your whole life, right? I've been dating my husband since I was a very young teenager, but what I do know is money. And here's what I will tell any woman, and I even tell my own daughters who are in their 20s. My daughter is mid-20s at that age where she's seriously dating and she's considering marriage, and the young man has thrown out some hints and has asked for her hand. And so this is what I'm telling her. A good approach is the blended approach, because that will work good, and it should keep things even keeled. You want to have your own individual account for your personal spending. I tell my daughters all the time, the one thing you don't want is to have all your money tethered to somebody else. So you do want to have your own accounts for personal spending. My husband and I have been working that way for years, but we also have a joint account for our shared bills. What that does is, having that blended approach is going to protect your independence while still building financial teamwork. So we know what our goals are. We have an account for our extracurricular goals, right? There are things that we want to accomplish together. We want to see certain cities. We want to see certain countries. So we keep money together over there. We have an account for our bills. We keep that money over here. But we also have our own independent bank accounts, no strings attached money. My husband does not need to know how much I paid for my nails today. He just doesn't. It doesn't really matter. I mean, it doesn't move the needle one way or the other, right? So I think if you want to buy a candy bar, you shouldn't have to run that past somebody. That's just how I feel. I think you should sit down, very often monthly. That's what I do at my house. Some couples that I work with as a licensed financial professional, that we sit together, me and them, quarterly or semi-annually, and we just go over the bills, the financial goals. What are we doing to help build that strong financial foundation? And if you are open and honest with one another, then it should be okay for you to have a little bit of your money that belongs to you for your personal spending, for the things you like to do, or for some of your own goals, in a separate account away from your spouse.
Okay. So if they have already started, they're a young couple and already got some babies, you know, some little bitty ones and toddlers and stuff, what's the best way for them to save for their child's future?
I'm glad that they're thinking about saving for their college future, because a lot of times parents don't often think about that until their kids are like knocking on the door of college. And then that's when they start sitting down and saying, oh, my goodness, I need to fill out a FAFSA and I need to do all these things. The earlier, the better. OK, so if you have a brand new baby, that baby is 14 days old and that baby has a social security card, it's time for you to start thinking about what the long-term cost of raising this child would be, but also what will college look like 18 years from now? Because it's already crazy insane today. So imagine what it's going to look like, Coach Deidre, 10, 15, 20 years from now. There are multiple ways for you to save for your child's future. A lot of people will, or a lot of financial professionals often recommend like a college 529 savings plan. Of course, it offers tax perks, flexible investment options, and it grows with your child. So that's an option. I am a proponent of a plan called the Index Universal Life Plan, IUL plan. The reason why I like the IUL plan is because it allows the parent to put some money in a life insurance policy. That plan is going to grow tax advantage, i.e. tax-free. So all of the interest that accumulates in that account will grow tax advantage, i.e. tax-free. And it doesn't have to be used for college. So that college 529 plan must typically be used for a college education. So if your child decides that they want to build video games for a living, or they want to just podcast, you know, 10 or 15 years from now, then guess what? Mom or dad, you going to college if you have that money in a 529 plan. But there are other plans like that Index Universal Life Plan where you can pull the money out, or you can withdraw or take a loan from the monies completely tax-free, and you can use it for whatever you want. Another reason why I'm a proponent of the Index Universal Life Plan, not that I'm not a proponent of the 529, but I like the IUL because, one, they don't have to go to college, but two, they also, Coach Deidre, don't have to listed on their FAFSA. So when they're applying for federal student aid, they don't have to say, or they don't have to list that we have this money over here, you know, in this Index Universal Life Plan. So there are multiple ways. I mean, some people just do a good old fashioned, put your money in the bank account. There's also plans through like companies like Gerber that I offer that have Gerber Life plans that are attached to a college savings. So I would advise, one, parents, do your due diligence. I mean, you can pretty much find everything on the internet these days, or you can get with a licensed financial professional like myself and my team. We're spread out all across the nation, and we'd be happy to offer you a free personal financial checkup and help give you some guidance on where those plans are, what they look like, and help get you to one of those plans.
So if you're have no kids, let's say that a couple of things are happening. You're single, got no kids, and, you know, just living your best life. What's the best insurance that they should get at that time, at that age, 20 to 30? And if they decide to get married, 28, you know, later on, do you have to change your insurance when you get married?
So if you're single, I want you to know you still need insurance. I think a lot of people have a misconception that I'm young, I'm free, I'm, you know, I'm doing me, I don't have any kids. But guess what? You are a person, you are an entity, you are a being. In the event of your demise, you still will have final expenses. Nobody gets out of this life unscathed. So you will have final expenses. So I always recommend life insurance. When you're single without children, you pretty much much, or a spouse, you pretty much will just need enough to cover your final expenses, your burial, you know, whatever that looks like in your mind for you. You also want to make sure that you have adequate health insurance. You want to make sure that you have proper disability coverage. You also want to have some form of long-term care. I tell people all the time, when you say, I'm single, I'm free, I don't have to be tethered or tied down to anybody, I don't have children, what that also means is, even if you have siblings, generally you and your siblings are in the same age group. So if you live long and you become older, you may have health issues along the way. You can't expect your siblings who are as old as you are to take care of you. A lot of times you will outlive your parents, so you cannot expect your parents to take care of you. So I tell everyone, especially those who are single without children, you want to learn about long-term care and how those plans work. Because in the event of a critical, chronic, or terminal disability, you will have the ability to pay for your care during that time, whether it be you having to go live at a medical facility, or you having a nurse come into your home, or you having a semi-private room at an assisted living facility. The main thing is that you don't have to completely ruin your finances. You don't have to completely destroy your bank account to take care of yourself in the event of a sickness, accident, or illness. I recommend that even if you do have a spouse, you want to look at long-term care as well. If you have a spouse and children or someone who depends on you, even if it's your parent, you want to make sure that you have 10 times your living expenses or 10 times your annual salary, either or, in a life insurance plan. And then on top of that, you are going to need renters or homeowners insurance. And again, life insurance becomes more and most important once you have someone dependent on your income. So if you get married, you want to update your beneficiaries. You don't necessarily have to change your coverage levels, but I would sit down with my spouse to make sure that you and your spouse, he or she, and you have an understanding of what the insurances that you have look like and how it would benefit the other in the event of the other's demise, accident, injury, or illness.
Got you. Now, I have a parent, and this question is coming from parents that want to encourage their kids to invest and learn about money at an earlier age. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So they're encouraging their 20 and 30 year olds to, you know, start getting some sound investment advice. But they're like, you know, it's not anything they can teach them themselves because they don't even know. So it's just like, and they want to say more than just go on the internet. You know what I mean? It's just like, hey, we want you to learn how to invest. We don't know how to teach you. Just go on the internet and teach yourself. That's not really the message that they're trying to get across. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So what's the best place that we can advise our children to go and get some sound investment advice that they can understand? That's, you know what I mean? That's just not on, you know, over their head, so to speak.
Okay. So of course I'm biased, because as you know, my company, World System Builder, we teach free financial literacy workshops Monday through Friday, three times a day on Zoom. And we also teach them inside of our over 600 financial centers all over the nation. So I'm biased because I do offer those financial literacy workshops. We have seven workshops and they're all geared towards different topics. Things like, saving and growing your wealth, or reducing your debt, reducing and eliminating debt. But for those parents who are like, Kendra, stop tooting your own horn. Got it. I will stop tooting my own horn. There are tons of podcasts and books written for new investors. Amazon can be your best friend. I know you said parents don't want them necessarily to go on the internet, but I have a newsflash for you. Friends, family, your children are on the internet. This is the world we live in. So YouTube can be your best friend. There are tons of free YouTube YouTube financially based, inspired, programs, podcasts. You know, there's tons of things on the internet, but I would say you want to read, you want to read, you want to listen, you want to discover. And you also, it does not hurt for you to push yourself and your children into the hands of certified financial professionals. Find somebody who's licensed and who specializes in financial planning. Find someone in your area who's close to you that is willing to sit down with you and do a complimentary financial checkup. Find someone who's close to you that can give you the information that you're seeking. And for those of you who are listening, if you want to start with a book, my company has a book called Saving Your Future, and I'd be more than happy to get that book in the hands of whomever here wants to listen, or wants a copy rather. In that book, we teach the bare bones basics about investing, how to build a strong financial foundation, and just the financial principles that people can use to really save, grow, and protect their money. Your children should learn about investments as early as possible, but if they're in their 20s, that means mom and dad, you're in your late 30s, early 40s, maybe even 50s or 60s. And if you don't know the information, that means you need to read too. That means you need to go into the workshops too. That means you need to study alongside your child. So just set aside 1 or 2 days a month and just say, hey, this is our family financial meeting day. And that's when you explore. That's when you take a workshop. Harvard has a bunch of free financial workshops. Not workshops, I'm sorry, free financial courses. So there are tons of colleges now that are offering financial literacy based or financial literacy inspired classes. But like I said before, if you're looking for a workshop, then I'm your girl. I can help get you in there 3 times a day, Monday through Friday on Zoom.
I love it. Thank you. And we are never tired of you tooting your own horn, Queen. That's okay. What we're here for. Okay. So let's get on to some older ladies. Let's go into our 40s and 50 year olds. And they definitely, I had to stop them with some questions. I had to, you know, because they came in too hard. I was like, we only got an hour show, ladies, and we can't spend it on all of y'all. So we did pick the top 5 questions that they had. And one, which is actually, this one question came up quite a bit, is what advice do you give to women who are not sure if they are going to stay in their marriages? How can they protect their finances? What should they do? And how can they get some of their husbands before they leave?
Well, first thing I tell women who are, you know, in those shaky marriages, who are kind of like, I don't know what I should be doing. I don't know if we should be keeping our money together or should it be separate, you know, who feel like maybe they're at a crossroads in their marriage. The first thing I tell them is protect your financial health. Do it now, right? The sooner the better. And what I mean by protect your financial health, I mean, make sure you have access to your own bank account and credit. You need to see what's on your credit report, because people that have been married for lengthy periods of time, often they've done so many things together, Deidre, that one spouse, or typically I find in my years of service in the financial industry, I find that a lot of women, especially those women that are in their 40s and 50s, those Gen Xers like us, they don't really know what's going on. So I often say, pull your credit report. You get a chance to have your credit report done free every year at annualcreditreport.com. You need to see what's joint. You need to see what's separate. You need to know what's in your name. You need to know what your credit score looks like. I also tell them, now's the time to start keeping copies of your important financial documents. And even the financial documents that you don't think belong to you, you think they're just your husband's. Look, we live in California, a community property state. If your husband has some medical paperwork, or you the mortgage documents, whether your name is on it or not, if it's tied to you, you need to know what it is and where it's at, and you need to keep a copy of it. So get a folder, get a binder, keep it all together, or scan it, you know, and keep it on in a zip file. You need to know exactly what you and your partner own and owe two different things, what you own and what you owe. And then before making big decisions, I want you to speak with a financial or legal professional that you trust, because you need to know if I do decide to walk away or if I decide to stay, what does this look like for me? Not just today. What is it going to look like for you 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now? If you're thinking about the moves you should be making, that means there's some moves that you should be making. And even if that move is not separation or divorce, you still need to start making moves to secure your financial future and for you to know what your financial foundation looks like right now, today, where you stand.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And good advice, because I think, you know, like you say, sometimes you get in those crossroads, but I like how you're talking about, hey, thinking about your future, whether you stay or not, because sometimes when you get the crossroads one time, you make it there another time a little bit later on down, and now you'll be a little bit more educated the next time you get down that way. So good thing. A lot of things sometimes that's happening in this age or a little bit older sometimes is, you know, you got to start taking care or thinking about your elderly parents, what's happening to their house, what's going to be happening to their health. What's the best way to think about your elderly parents without it jeopardizing your finances?
So this comes up all the time, and people always give me the raised eyebrow when I answer this question, because the first thing I want to say is you got to start with boundaries. Okay. You got to set some boundaries. You have to decide what your role is going to be when it comes to taking care of your aging and or elderly parents. If they are in a position where they need additional help, or even before they need additional help, look into long-term care insurance. I tell people, don't wait until your parents are on their deathbed to get in their business. My mom is fairly young. My mom is young and cute and she's vibrant and all those things. But guess what? I know that if I look at the date on the calendar and I'm real close to the big 50, I know that she's getting up there as well in age. So now is the time for me to really get in her business. I need to know what kind of insurance she has. You need to know do your parents have long-term care insurance? You need to know what kind of community programs are in your area that could be a support for you when you do get to the point where you may need some additional help or some additional services. You want to know what kind of government benefits your parents are going to qualify for, because whatever the gap is between the benefits that they are qualified for and the savings that they have, guess who's going to fill that gap, or who's supposed to fill that gap? It'll be you. So you need to have an idea of what their financial situation looks like long before they rapidly age or become ill. You want to avoid dipping into your own retirement savings to take care of your parents, because who's going to take care of you when you are retired? And it's important to, of course, care for them, but you also need to protect your own future. You really do. So I would say, if you are in that age group and your parents are getting older, rule number one is get in their business now, so that in the event that something happens to them, you're not at their house scrambling, throwing papers over your head, going through every drawer, looking through every folder, you know, going through every bubblegum receipt, trying to figure out where things are. Get clarity while they are able to help you gain that clarity.
And you know what? I think that is, will open up a lot of talk that, you know, like we have taboo. It's just like, you know, and we can find out sometimes because our parents are doing a lot of stuff that they don't even need to be doing. It's just like, why are you doing this? You know what I mean? So if we can have this conversation instead of this dragging out for another 10 or 15 years and come to find out you don't even need it. Because I know we found out, you know, a lot of stuff, especially when, you know, my mother-in-law died. It's just like, you know, when you go back to help, you know, Paul went back to go help his dad and stuff. It was just like, there's just a lot of stuff you don't even need anymore that is so automatically getting taken out of your account. You know what I'm saying? You don't even realize it. You're just making sure you're covering it. You're not paying attention to why or if you need to still have it covered. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. My husband's grandfather was the same way. We got in his business. He lived in Florida and we went down to visit him and it was, everything was just in disarray. And by the time my husband really started combing through everything with the fine tooth comb, I mean, this man had all kinds of people, that had allegedly tried to sell him something and he would just sign and he would just, you know, he had all these weird reoccurring fees coming out of his account and he couldn't account for them. And he was in his right mind, but he was like, oh, I think I made a donation there once. And it's like, yeah, you made a donation there once in 2015, but they're still pulling out of your account in 2020. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he just had all these random contributions, and all these different bills. And I mean, he had Sports Illustrated magazines and he wasn't even receiving the magazines. It was just all these things were coming out of his account, draining his account dry. And he was just completely not aware. And sometimes we hate to be the bearer of the bad news, but sometimes our parents and grandparents should not be taking care of a household. They're just mm-hmm. not in that position anymore. And so my husband's family had to make the hard decision to sell the grandfather's house. So those are the conversations you want to have while your parents and possibly even your grandparents, because for mm-hmm. us, it wasn't our parents, it was our grandparents. So there's a lot of people in their 40s and 50s, Coach Deidre, who also have to look after their grandparents. Yes. So get in their business.
Yes. And you know, that's a whole different story because you have a parent that you have to take care of that has also lost their parent because that's your grandparent. So then we get into a whole mixture of things that are happening and stuff that goes on. So that's a good point that you saying that people do have grandparents and their parent is still alive as well. So good looking. Okay. Let's think about a question that I thought was actually real interesting. And I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have about this one is that I didn't even know this was something people thought about. I thought you automatically pay your debt off first, but obviously some people think like, should I pay off my debt or it just pay the minimum of my debt and increase my savings? What do you suggest?
So as a financial expert, I recommend building a starter emergency fund first.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you want to pay off your debt. You want to do it simultaneously if you possibly can. Okay. So I want you to balance both as best you can, but you need to have at least 1 month of emergency savings. And then once you get that 1 month of emergency savings, I want you to focus on paying down high interest debt. And never, ever, ever pause retirement contributions because you cannot get those years back. So you can't get those retirement years back, but you want to start working on a plan to get rid of that debt. A lot of times we're under the impression, and this is after we've let our debt go crazy and get out of hand. We're under the impression that we can always do it ourselves. Sometimes you are going to need help, help by way of, you know, a debt resolution, debt settlement company, help by way of a Chapter 7 or a Chapter 13 bankruptcy, help by way of sitting with a financial professional and doing something like the snowball effect where you're just, you know, paying down, either your smallest, interest debt or your highest interest debt. But the main thing is that you want to make sure that you are still building your emergency savings because you could have paid off all your debt, but in the event of a natural disaster or the pandemic was a natural disaster. And so it didn't matter that all your credit cards were paid off if you didn't have shelter, food, gas, you know, a warm place to sleep at night. So you want to make sure that you don't forget to build that emergency savings fund and take your money and split it up. Start working on just one debt at a time, but also work on that 1 month of emergency savings fund, build it to two, build it to three. And your ultimate goal is to have 12 months of your living expenses covered in an account somewhere so that in the event that the world goes cuckoo like it did in 2020, you'll be okay.
Okay. All right. Now, the first group wanted to know the early steps of retirement. In this group, they're trying to say, hey, is it too late to start a retirement or have some type of retirement strategy? And if it, you know, if not, what should they do first?
No, it's never too late. It's absolutely not too late. The first step is just understanding how much you'll need, right? And then use every tool available to you. Maximizing your employer plans, using catch-up contribution methods, trimming your expenses where you can, and redirecting that money to your future. Putting your money in plans that you own and operate. You don't necessarily have to use your company sponsored retirement plan. There are other methods to building a strong financial foundation. And not being afraid to make extra money and, you know, utilizing your talents. A lot of us have talents that we don't even get paid for. I know people who bake cakes just for fun, just whimsical, beautiful Cinderella cakes. You could be making money from that. I know people that do hair. You could be making money from that. Whatever your talents are, you can use those. And if you just feel like, hey, I don't have a talent, well, that's okay. You can always join another company or start a side hustle or start a new business. But the main thing is understanding how much money you will need to retire. Good rule of thumb, and brace yourself, folks. A good rule of thumb is for you to have 20 times your annual income saved up for retirement. So what that means is if you are accustomed to making $50,000 per year, $50,000 times 20 is $1 million. So what am I going to do to get towards that $1 million? Well, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to start, right? The first thing you're going to do is you're going to recognize how much of a gap you have between where you are now and where you want to be. And then the second step is figuring out how much time do I have to get to that amount of money. If you're alive and well, then you have time to get to that money. You don't necessarily have to have all $1 million at the age of 65. That just means at 65, you still got to have some earning potential. You still got to have some active monies coming in or passive money coming in that will help you to get to that $1 million or help you to be able to still be you during your retirement years. So no, it's never too late. Don't be afraid to have a side hustle. Always know exactly where you are and how much of a gap you have, but also how much time you have to get to that, to cover that gap. And you could absolutely do it. Start today. Just start. Save $5 or $10. Put it in a jar. That's a start, right? Just making sure that you are saving something, but also saving it in a place where it's going to be protected and it is going to grow. Because the reality is saving it in a jar at home, you're not getting any interest. So technically it's not growing. So you do want to look for places that are going to give you the maximum amount of interest, but the least amount of risk for the most part. You don't want to take on too much risk, especially if you don't have a lot to lose.
Okay. And you were talking about, you know, is there a time when someone knows, or like their question is, when do they know they're retirement ready? Because I think that that's even something now that people are very worried about is not only, as you say, I guess it has to do all about the money, really, because you just made a really good point earlier where you said retirement doesn't have anything to do with age, has to do with cash.
Absolutely.
So how do you know when you're retirement ready?
Well, I would say you're getting close to retirement when your expected income, right, the income you know for sure is coming in March, when your expected income can cover your essential bills, when it can when your debt is low, when you have low to no debt, meaning, hey, I bought the house, it's paid off. Or maybe I didn't buy the house and it's paid off or nearing paying off, but I know I can cover my rent and my essential bills every month without blinking an eye. Even if I don't show up at work, you also must think about your healthcare costs. You know, you're close to retirement when you figured out how your healthcare costs are going to be covered in retirement. Like I said earlier, retirement isn't just a number. It's a readiness check. Retirement is clarity. You have to know where everything is at and how it's all going to be paid, because in retirement, you generally don't have active income, meaning you don't got to show up over there to get the check. Your income should be passive, meaning you can lay in bed and the money is still going to come. So you'll know when you get to the point where you could take 2 weeks off, 3 weeks off, 30 days off, and your money still is going to roll in like clockwork, or you know where you can reach for that money and cover all of your expenses and still be you and still live the life that you desire to live or that you're currently living without having to blink or think twice.
Okay. All right. We got just enough time maybe to get this last group, and that is going to be our 60 and over group, has a couple of questions for you as well. First group question they have is, what's the pros and cons of working past retirement when it comes to finances?
Well, let's just start with saying working longer can boost your savings. You can delay being forced to withdraw. You can increase your Social Security benefit. To me, being active prolongs your life. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, you still got to be in the factory, you know, packing the candy like I Love Lucy. Remember when Lucy and Ethel were trying to box up the candy and they were eating it? You don't have to do anything hard, but sometimes working past retirement age keeps you young and vibrant, right? But it doesn't have to be hard work. Maybe do something that you love, have a passion project. But there are trade-offs, like less free time, and the possibility. Now, this is a low possibility, but it can happen. You could end up having to pay taxes on your Social Security. But it's all about, I tell people this, it's all about what feels right for you, for your lifestyle, for your health. I personally believe that you're going to find me at 79, Coach Deidre, on somebody's podcast just like this. Now, I might be a different kind of podcast. You know, I might be broadcasting from the Jetsons, mobile flying in the sky. But I feel right now where I am in life, I feel like I'm always going to work. I'm always going to have some form of service that I'm doing. But yeah, it's just all about what's right, what feels right for you, for your lifestyle, for your health, what makes you happy. If retiring and sipping pina coladas on the beach makes you happy at 52, then you need to be working towards that at 32. Because again, retirement is all about money. So most of the people that we see working past retirement age is not because they want to, but it's because financially they have to.
Got you. Now, we know, and I know that this is something that I learned from you, is that mostly in couples, we will probably outlive our hubbies. So if and when we become a widow, how can we secure financial future alone? What do we get from our hubbies? What should we be making sure that we have secured from them now, or anything like that?
So first of all, you got to start off by understanding any survivor benefits that you're going to get from their Social Security or their pension. The reality is most people aren't receiving pensions anymore, which is really sad, right? Mm-hmm. So you need to know what their benefits package looks like at work. Because a lot of times husbands go to work and they just check the boxes. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I can tell you a story. My own grandmother was married to my grandfather for almost 70 years. They had been together since 1938, married in 1940. My grandfather died right before his 90th birthday. And forever, my grandmother thought she was going to be just fine. She was going to be taken care of. Well, two things happened. One, he filled out his retirement paperwork or his benefits package to pay him more during his lifetime. So because he was paid more during his lifetime, it ended with his lifetime. So there was no pension for her. Second, he had what we call a decreasing term life insurance plan, and it decreased to zero before he died. So there was no life insurance. And then lastly, because they had both been living off of his Social Security and her Social Security checks, when he passed away, you can only get one. His was bigger than hers, so hers went away. So not only was his pension and his retirement checks gone, her Social Security checks were gone. So she was living off less than a quarter of what she'd been living off of while he was alive. So women, I want to say this. You need to know what his benefits plan look like. Second of all, you want to get some life insurance. You can secure your financial future and protect your financial future by having a big life insurance policy. I tell my husband all the time, yes, we are paying a lot of money in life insurance, but in the event of your untimely demise, I would like to cry in a Bentley and not a Buick. you know, so we often sit down and we reassess our budgets so that we can pay those higher premiums for his life insurance. Same with him. I have the policies on myself as well, but you want to reassess your budget and adjust your lifestyle if needed in life so that in the event of the other's death, you're still able to survive. You want to make sure all of your investments, his investments, your investment, if you're a she and a she or a he and a he, you want to make sure all your investments, all your insurance plans, are adequate and that they will reflect, single income living in the event of the other's demise. And if you really just feel unsure, you need to sit with a financial professional. I want people to know that we can give you all the best advice here on this platform, but you still have work to do when you leave this platform. Don't just jot it down and take notes. You need to sit down. You need to really look at your budget. You need to know what your spouse plans are. You need to know what he or she is doing at work. You need to look at their HR paperwork, their benefits package. You need to sit down with them and make sure that you are listed as a beneficiary. If you own property, make sure you have a living trust. You want to have a living trust that names you as the heir to whatever tangible things are in that estate. The last thing you want to do is for your spouse to pass away and the house not be yours, or the car not be yours, or you not have access to the bank accounts. So now's the time to really sit down, work together to build that strong financial foundation.
Okay. You're talking about, since we were talking about demise and all this, what's the difference between estate planning and having a will? And do you need both, or, you know, or is one better than the other?
So a will is just a piece of your estate plan. A will is going to tell people where your belongings go to. So the will is inside of your estate plans. My team and I, we work with a trusted national attorney service, and we often sit down with people to help them craft their estate plans. Everybody's estate plan is different, but there are some key essential components that makes up your estate plan. Okay, so your estate plan is the biggest picture of you making sure that you're protecting your assets. So a basic estate plan will include your will. It will include your healthcare directives. Okay. Do you want to be resuscitated or not resuscitated in the event that you become incapacitated? You know, you fall out, your heart's not beating. Do you want them to resuscitate and revive you or not? If that's not on paper, guess who gets to decide? The doctor. So you want to, if you want, hey, bring me back 1,000 times, you need to have that on paper. Your powers of attorney are in your estate plan. Plans for how your assets should be handled. What should happen to the house? Earlier, I made a post because I work with a group of men, and they have all these, they restore cars, and they have all these rebuilt and restored, remodeled, old school, cars, and they have no estate plan for those cars, and they're not married. Well, what happens in the event of your demise or in your incapacitation? Where do the cars go? So you need a plan to give detail on how your assets should be handled, not just in death, but maybe you're just, like I said, you're not able to talk. You're not able to walk. You're incapacitated. So Do you need a will? Yes, you do. But most people benefit from having the total estate plan, the will, the trust, the healthcare directives, the powers of attorney, and then the instructions for how you want your assets handled. Guess what? Your dogs are a part of your assets. Your children, guardianship forms. In the event of my demise, what happens to my children? I meet a lot of couples, Coach Deidre, who say, oh, if something happens to me, my husband's going to take over the children. What happens if you and your husband die on the plane together or in the car together? Then who gets your children? If you don't have it written down on paper, if you don't have it in an estate plan, guess who can raise their hand and say they want your children? Anybody. The courts will take over. The court, the judge who doesn't know your children can make a decision that your children should be in foster care because you didn't take the time to simply put it in a plan to say, in the event of my demise, my sister so-and-so would be the best caretaker or the guardian of my children. So you need to write it down, make it plain, have it notarized, put up somewhere so that people know what your final wishes are.
Okay. Before we get out of here today, Queen, I do want to ask if there is something that you would, that we've never covered that you would like to explain to someone about, you know, their finances, especially with women, this one, what would you like your final words before we start our weekend for, women wellness, women's finances, and just women in general?
Women, I want you to get to the point in your life where you start taking these matters into your own hands. Financial literacy is the biggest currency there is, right? Just knowing how money works, understanding your money. You also need to start understanding taxes. Taxes is not just money taken out of your paycheck. Taxes is knowing that where you put your money will determine how you grow your money, how you're able to save your money, how you're able to protect your money, and how your money is spent. So you need to know this one thing. There are only three places you can put your money. I don't care if it's called a checking account, savings account, stocks, annuity, an IRA, a 403B, a 401K. There are really only three places you can put your money. You can put your money in a place that's taxed now. That means as soon as that money makes a penny in interest, you got to pay tax on it that following year, right? You can put your money in a place that's taxed later. That plan that they're telling you to put your money in at work, they're not pulling any money out on the front end, but when you use it, they're going to pull it out in the back end. That's called tax later. And then there are accounts that are tax never, tax advantaged accounts. You've already paid tax on every dollar that's in your wallet. So why not allow that money to grow completely tax free? So tax now, tax later, tax never. The sooner you learn how taxes play a role in your wealth building, the better off you'll be. So if you want to learn more, you can find me on Coach Deidre's website. You can also find me at info for Kendra L. Willis at gmail.com. And Kendra knows best on all social media platforms. Let's sit down. Let's work on building a strong financial foundation. I have team members all across the U.S. that can help you. So it doesn't matter if you're in California, you're in Texas, wherever you're listening at today. Just know this, no matter your age, financial confidence is possible. And these conversations need to be had because they help women take control, make empowered choices, and build a future that supports the life that they've worked so hard for. So thank you for having me, Coach Deidre. Women, find me. Let's work together.
Yes, ma'am. All right, Queen, have a great weekend, and I will be seeing you soon as usual.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. The financial landscape for women is changing rapidly. About 20% of women today are single or the only adult in their household. And among those who aren't, nearly 40% lead their household's financial decisions. These numbers highlight a growing need for women to boost their financial literacy so they're ready to take control of their money with confidence. And as more women find themselves in these situations, being prepared to manage your money effectively ensures you stay on track to live comfortably and achieve your financial goals. Don't wait for a crisis. Take the first step today toward financial independence and security. Small steps today create big results tomorrow. Your future self will thank you. So I guess that wraps it up for me today. Thanks for tuning in and listening. We can stay connected on my social media outlets, my Facebook page, If Nothing Changes, Nothing Changes Life Coaching, my Instagram page at Coach Deidre, and past podcasts can be heard on CoachDeidre.com. So I'll be back with a new show Friday, March 27th at noon on the one and only Inner Light Radio. I hope you'll tune in again. Until then, I hope you'll be doing more than paying bills and waiting to die. Go live. This is Deidre, your life coach, reminding you, if you want to make a change in your life, do it. Because if nothing changes, nothing changes.